そうですね。
I can see your last oversight was in the Western Cape.
Yes, it was, and we were with the mayor of Saldanha Bay.
That's why you are so Afrikaans now.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome all of you to the meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprise. I only have one apology, and that is if the meeting stretches beyond 12 o'clock, Honorable September, I'd like to be recused. Oh, there are three other apologies.
Yeah, I've received an apology from Mr. Nana, Mr. Hololo, and Mr. Jacobo. And the one from the chairperson of the board of
SAFCOT. Okay. We have two presentations today. We expect two presentations today. The one is from the Department of Public Enterprise on the future of SAFCOT, and the next one will be by SAFCOT on land claims, beneficiation, and social responsibility, and these are issues that we raised in our last visit. There's a document that has been distributed which contains the presentation by SAFCOT. Before we invite the department, I would like us, I know we, some of us know one another, but let's just do a quick introduction. My name is Peter Maralek. I'm chairperson of the committee. We'll go this way.
My name is Tisanda Jimmy, and I'm the secretary of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Gloria Borman, a member of the committee.
I'm also a member of the committee, Connie September.
Good morning. My name is Aubrey Mufed, member of the portfolio committee.
I'm Rose Sonto, a member of the committee.
I'm Natasha Michael, member of the committee.
And Shadow Minister.
Good morning, Gerard Marie, member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning, Gerard Kornhoff, member of the committee.
Morning, my name is Eric Boscati, researcher for the committee.
Morning, my name is Sam from the Department of Public Enterprises.
Morning, my name is
Kinelo
from the Department of Public Enterprises.
Please tell us what your position is in the public enterprise. Mandiwan, what did you say?
I'm a parliamentary resident officer.
I'm a director of forestry oversight.
Morning, my name is Fashan Mkomba. I'm the acting deputy director general responsible for SAFCOT within DPE.
Good morning, my name is Paul Muschesi. I'm with SAFCOT. I used to be responsible for enterprise development and social economic development.
And now you're not responsible for anything?
It used to be. I've moved into a sort of different field now. I'm responsible for strategy, planning, and ICT.
Yeah, that's what we want. Here's your current position.
Good morning, my name is Ndumine Dubi. I chair the Audit and Risk Committee for SAFCOT, and I'm standing on behalf of me.
I'm
going to the chairman of the board. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Leslie Jumeli. I'm a senior manager and staff responsible for land claims and the liaison and communications.
You know, when we had that, what was it? International Parliamentary what? Union. Conference here in Cape Town. So we were receiving guests from outside at the Owar Tambo International, and there was this delegation from Israel, and one of the staff who was helping the delegation with logistics and so on approached me and said, we are the delegation from Israel, we are with the former minister. I said, no, what is his position now? And she said, no, he's the former minister and he's our future president. We
don't have such positions, so it can't be the VIP. So we want the current position. Yeah, that's trying to say that we, if you didn't have a current position, we would kick you out. We will then invite DPE to brief us, but we haven't introduced the people at the back, eh?
So Dominic Royce from Business Day Financial Mail.
Okay.
That's my current position.
That's your current position.
Current position.
Let's then invite the department to tell us about the bright future of SAFCO. I don't know who's going to do it.
Thank you, Honorable.
And you heard what I said. So if it's not bright, don't say anything.
Thanks.
Pardon? Please go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As the department, we didn't prepare a presentation as such, but what we have done is that the work is still underway, and we anticipate to conclude that by the end of September. We did write a letter to you, I think around June, informing you that the work is still underway, and we're hoping to conclude that by the end of September, after which we will approach Cabinet for approval, because you will recall that there's a decision which says that SAFCO must be privatized. So we're still exploring all the options, and we are also mindful of the Presidential Review Commission, their recommendations which have not been announced. So we also need to finalize that aspect before we make the final determination on the future role of SAFCO. At this stage, it will be premature to pronounce, because we firstly need to approach Cabinet on the future role of SAFCO before we make that announcement or determination.
Chairperson, thank you. I don't know how to put this nicely, but I don't know that that is acceptable. You know, we've got a state-owned company here who have got to try and move forward, and we are dilly-dallying here. Now, I can appreciate your thoughts about the Presidential Review Committee, and I think there too. I mean, that's also a dragging feet thing. But how are companies supposed to proceed like this? I mean, this has gone on for a whole year, and 10 months, all right, I'm exaggerating. So, you know, and how are these companies supposed to move forward and have plans and everything when we are sitting here saying, sorry, we're not ready yet, and the reports aren't coming, and we can't even come and present to the portfolio chair. It's just not on. I'm sorry. I don't find it acceptable.
Chair, thank you. I share the sentiments of Honorable Borman. I don't think it's funny to come here and to tell us that, look, first of all, I don't have a report, and secondly, it's still... Let's put this thing into context. The issue about SAFCO has been coming on for 8 years. So not a year. I have been in other committees when this matter was discussed. And there's no such a thing that the government is still thinking of privatizing. The government has taken a decision that it will invest in its entities. So if it's a new decision, if I take out your strategic plan now, then I'll show you what you have said in here. So I think, Chair, let's not waste our time with the officials. Let's send them back and then write to the minister to express our absolute disgust that in his name officials have come here to say that they still are wah. And then, if needs be, we rather engage with the minister or the deputy to ask him to come and address us on this matter. I think we are absolutely insulted by, you know, the parliament has been taken for a ride here by what the official has said to us.
It will sound like a chorus to say I concur with my previous colleagues. Safe to say that we shouldn't send you packing. I think we should buttonhole you here. Close the door and really, I wouldn't say force you, but as the members have said, you see, as a patrol committee, our job is to exercise oversight. And we cannot have a conveyor belt type of showing of a face. The cost implications are involved there. You traveled all the way from where you were to come here. And you're going to reflect that in your in the column of expenditure that on such a day, on the 7th we did go to Cape Town to make a presentation, and you'll reflect that on your glossy files in terms of presentation to give an impression that Parliament is kept abreast when in fact Parliament is in the dark. Now, you cannot truncate our arms and say because the report is going to be available in September and you must first have it presented to Cabinet before you can come and brief us. You see, you don't understand the constitutional model that the state has got three organs, the judiciary, parliament in the middle, which is NCOP and National Assembly, and the executive. Each organ has got its own function. I mean, the state, the president articulated that so many times in the state of the national parliament to actually say each one of us has got a role to play. Now, we are the legislature here. And as a legislature, we are legislators. Nobody should prevent us from doing our work. We are entitled to exercise oversight and to know what's going on. Because, you see, if we don't do this, then we'll be guilty of dereliction of duty. Why did you let those people just go back? We've seen now, we've got a very bad evidence of one of the enterprises. We just mentioned openly, as Express. They came here now, they gave us a very impressive report. We nearly gave them a standing ovation. Lo and behold, somebody after that blew a whistle and said, hey, all what you had there is just a lot of hogwash. There's a lot of rot there. Now, I'll tell you why we must insist, Chairperson. We went to see SAFCO, I think it was 10 months ago, and what astounded me and other members, among other things, was the fact that some of the people, some of your senior personnel who were taking us around, showing us different places, for instance, when the question was asked, well, they were not asked a question, they just mentioned that we don't know who owns us. Now, it was absolutely outrageous for a person who's making a presentation to actually say in the middle, we don't know who owns this. Because they had this thing of privatization. And on September, we adequately addressed that. It was stopped. Because when it came in 1994, the previous regime had a desk. The Ministry of Private Enterprise was just reduced to a little desk to say, let's sell everything. And of course, the ruling party stopped that. That desk dismantled it and made it into a full-fledged ministry and said, nothing gets sold, you're not selling anything. So now we have a situation of 18 years. Now you've got to tell us what you have been doing, at least since we went to see, let's say, since the portfolio committee came to see us, this is what has been happening. So now we can assist you. We're not here as a sheriff or so, or some hangman. We need to be empowered so that we can empower you. Otherwise, if we get the late report, we find out that too much damage has been done.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, Chair, look, it is very disappointing when you come to a committee meeting and you have this kind of response from the officials. Chair, and I think my colleague has just said exactly what I wanted to say. We are here to be taken into confidence. We are the mechanism for which, when there is a problem, we are here to help find solutions. We are here to help guide. We are here as the voice of South Africans. And I think it is disappointing when officials see fit not to take us into their confidence. And quite frankly, in a situation like this, Chair, mislead the portfolio committee as to what we're expecting to receive today. And I think it's a worrying trend, and it's happened twice, and I think the trend needs to stop now, Chair.
Chairperson, I think a lot has been said already, and I just want to add my voice to say that it's a totally unacceptable attitude of the DPE to come to a parliament to say you're not ready. This program has been finalized, the secretary can bear me up, this program has been finalized towards the end of the previous term and circulated at least to all members and the stakeholders, including the department. And to come here on the day of the meeting to say you cannot present, it doesn't fly with the committee at all. Because somewhere there was a breaking communication between whoever is in the loop of getting the program of parliament, preparing for that, and coming to make a presentation. Because they're on the board, at the same time when we informed the department to come and brief us, we also requested SAFCO to come and brief us on a different subject. SAFCO is probably ready. We've received the presentation. And these two requests were put out at the same time. SAFCO didn't get it, and we ignored the DP. It's impossible. It's not possible. So I would think that the future of SAFCO is a long-standing issue, outstanding. We've been to SAFCO, we discuss it with SAFCO, we discuss it with the department, it's work in progress, and we're working towards finding a solution as us together. And to come here to say we're not ready because of that and that and that is not acceptable. I want you to make a ruling on this, whether what steps we're going to take, because we cannot afford, it happened before, and we acted very strongly, and I think we cannot afford to let a department or a state-owned company come to Parliament to say we cannot present to you.
You want to comment? I'll give you an opportunity to comment if you want.
Thanks. we note the committee's concerns, and we just to give you just some comfort. The work has been done, and currently we do have an idea of what needs to happen with SAFCO. However, there are other aspects that needs to be addressed, like the land claims, the business model that or rather the settlement model that rural and land reform is working on. So basically, as a whole, there are a number of aspects that needs to be put together before we can say that this is the final model. However, there are we have convened a task team which comprises of the Department of Forestry and Agriculture.
I don't think anything that you're going to try to do now will give the committee any comfort. I think you said that you can't give a presentation on the future of SAFCO, because that's what the committee wants. And see, Dr. Kuradov says the program was sent to GPE a long time ago, and there was an invite, there was a follow-up on the 31st of July, the 31st. Just to remind you on what is it that the committee expects the department to address it on with regard to the future of SAFCO. So we didn't say anything between the program being submitted to the department, the follow-ups that were done, and today. You know, and then we undertake a very expensive exercise to come here and say, no, we're not ready. It's completely unacceptable. And I don't think it can be defended, because the way Jisang was communicating with you, that's what should have happened from your side, that we're not ready, and that could even have asked for an extension or whatever reason you wanted to give us. But, you know, we didn't make use of that. You didn't make use of that, and which I think cannot be justified. We can't justify the fact that you travel all the way from, I assume, Pretoria, to come and say, no, we're not ready. We can't justify that. But as members have said, we will take it up with the minister to make it clear to the minister that, you know, this is one thing that cannot be justified. We can't accept it. So I wouldn't like you to go any further and try and give comfort to the members. The members have said how uncomfortable they are with this situation, and I don't think anything else now here will give them any comfort. No explanation will give them any comfort, and I don't want us to waste that time, to waste time just trying to do that. So I think that's really it. Like I said, I don't think anything you're going to say now is going to help. You insist that you want to say something.
No, maybe.
Chair, just to clarify that we did communicate via our parliamentary liaison officer that the department is not ready to present at this stage. In fact, there's a letter that was sent previously on this issue to address to you, Chair.
Yeah, but I don't think if that we'll look at the communication and everything after this. But I just want to make it clear that this is not acceptable, and it can't be justifiable.
During the introduction, the lady there, I think it's a male or a female, said that she was here to represent, well, she's, the audit committee is also in the capacity of representing the chairperson of SAFCO, who's not here. Can you hear from her, please?
No, Renee is not representing SAFCO. She's representing the department.
No, but I had something like...
Yeah, but that was not in the meeting. If it's something outside the meeting, we can't...
No, she says so here.
Yeah.
Here.
Oh, I thought...
No, today, what is the introduction? Let her speak for herself.
This one,
she's of age.
You are from SAFCO,
she's of age. Let us
speak. Oh, okay. I thought. No. But we're still dealing. There are two presentations. So we're dealing with the department, and this part is for the department. So we will come to SAFCO.
So we're still going to come to SAFCO itself.
Yes. SAFCO is going to make their presentation. These are two different...
I understand that, but the way the meeting went, it was, they were conflated.
No, it's not. Honorable Katema, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I your, probably your ruling on this thing, but as you're going to communicate, one of the things that needs to be in that communication in general is the department brought a strategic plan to this committee, and in that strategic plan it said that it will do a number of things.
Yes.
Now this problem of not being ready must be put into that context of their own strategic plan. It's not us that said that, they said that to us. So whether they're going to go back or not, the truth is it is now August. And they're not adhering to their own strategic plan, even, and I think that thing also needs to be answered.
I think let's leave it at that. We will then close this item and invite SAFCOF to brief the committee.
Thank you, Chairman. Once more, good morning. My name is Julie. I represent SAFCOL. I'm from Audit and Risk. I chair that committee. And I'd like to extend our apologies once more on behalf of the Chairman of the Board, Mpanelo, and also of our acting CEO who's preparing for maternity leave. Chairman, you've prepared the agenda for today, and I just want to take you through the agenda for today. First item, we just want to bring you progress on SAFCOL land claims, Chairman. Since the past visit. The next item will be the presentation on social economic development initiatives of SAFCOL and also on enterprise development programs that we have. Finally, Chairman will also update you on the actions that you've taken since your last visit. Just to introduce the report and its scope, Chairman, it is the purpose of this report that we have today is just to give you progress on how we've resolved the land claims today, and also to report on our SED, Social Economic Development Initiatives and Enterprise Development, and also the updates in action post your visit in Mpumalanga. Chairman, just want to note that this report excludes the progress on land claims already for privatized entities with SAFCOL, that is Laxia, Kubeka, Amatole, and those have already been completed. And Chairman, the other item then is going to also exclude the future role of SAFCOL that's been deliberated. Chairman, I'm accompanied by two senior managers from SAFCOL, and Leslie is going to take you through all the land claim issues, and Palmas will take you through all initiatives by the company on economic development and social economic initiatives. Thank you.
Chair, honorable members, and the representative of the department. In terms of the land claims, the claims that we have on the operations are running through three provinces. We've got two claims in KZN, and the rest of other claims are in Mpumalanga and Limpopo provinces. From our statistics and the research that we've done, we found that at the time, and the research and statistics was done in 2008, we found that it reflects about 61% of the total land holding by SAFCOL being under land claims by different claimant communities. And these pose strategic risk for the organization going forward, as alluded already by the department. The claims that we have are with different claimant groupings. We had 29 claimant groupings, and just recently we found that there's two more that came in. Actually, there's three more that came in. So it's going to increase even the numbers and the percentage, and we need to just do the quantifications and just do the recalculations again. So these claims are in different stages, and I think it's important to note that the claims are administered in terms of the Restitution Act and also the other acts in terms of labor tenants and ester rights and so forth. So most of the bulk of our claims are under the Restitution Act. And in terms of the Restitution Act, the claims have to be investigated, and after investigated, they have to be gazetted. When they are gazetted, they go to the negotiation stages where there's a lot of facilitation processes, and then a legal entity is formed, and then the claim can be settled. When we look at the claims in SAFCOL, specifically more the commodity and forest claims, most of the claims are in research, and a few have been gathered. If you can look at the statistics, 13 of the 31 claims now are researched,
but not yet gazetted, and 18 are gazetted. And the rest which have been settled, we've only managed to settle one at the moment, and the three which are in the settlement stages, some of which are awaiting the settlement model and so forth. This is just a detail of all the claims per plantation. You will remember honorable members visited some of our plantations in Mpumalanga, and some of them already had claims and some of them had community staying within the plantation. And those are just a list of which plantation has got claims and how much hectares is claimed in terms of that plantation. I just want to highlight that in terms of the estimated hectares, the 61% could result into about 114,000 hectares. But at the stage, the ones that we have in terms of the gazetted ones is staying at 64,000 hectares. All these claims are purely under the land that SAFCOL is having a lease. Is leasing to from the Department of Water Affairs and of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And these ones now, which is amounting to about 12,000 hectares claimed, is on the land that SAFCOL itself owns. And I'm happy to announce that one of the claims at Shannon Plantation in Mpumalanga, measuring 12,000 hectares, has already been settled. We settled it, I think it was in May this year. The minister has handed over the land already. It's managed now, co-managed with the community. The objectives of the group in terms of the bulk of the claims that are within the state forest land, which is leased from Dwarf, is that SAFCOL is positioning itself to partner with the claimants and to ensure that the claimants consider forestry as a preferred land use option. Honorable member and Honorable Connie September will understand that to really get a license forested land is very difficult. So it's better to make sure that as we really position ourselves with the community, we make sure that the land which is already having a license for afforestation, that license is not lost. And we are also trying to educate them in terms of forestry, and we are also doing a lot more work in terms of their participation in the sector. The SAFCOL involvement has been in different forms. We have engaged in terms of the interdepartmental task team, and we would like to thank DPE, the department, for helping us with that. They've chaired the very difficult interdepartmental meetings where we had DEFT in, we had rural development and land reform, we had public works, and the commissioner was there. And we're trying to try and see if we can discuss issues around the settlement model and the lease model, and that has been shared by the DDG. The other issues that we have been focusing on internally is to try and develop capacity within the group. As land claims has been something that has been thrown to us, we have tried to get in capacity and have a division that really focuses on assisting to unbundle the processes, assisting to move the processes. You'll see with my other presentations that some of the focuses was to try and provide even the Department of Rural Development and the Commissioner with mapping expertise and other assistance that we could provide so that we can really unbundle these claims. We have also had engagement in high-level meetings where the Commissioner met with our CEO, and we also initiated departmental specific meetings within the provinces. There's a meeting now that we hold in KwaZulu-Natal to resolve the claims, and one meeting in Mpumalanga, and one meeting in Limpopo, where we meet with the project managers of the rural development, the commissioner. We sit around the table, discuss the claim, and try and see if we can assist them. But I must just confess that the process is really very, very, very slow. The other issue that we've done is to start what we call joint community forums meetings, and my other colleague will really allude to that, how we form joint community forums, include land claimants, they sign in a sort of a community development agreement so that they're part of the processes that we do in terms of socio-economic development and enterprise development. I've highlighted the issues of the meetings. In terms of the interdepartmental task team meetings, the focus was more on issues of warehousing of shares of the previous entities that were privatized, issues of finalization of the lease in terms of the KLF lease, and also the model part, and also starting with discussions with claimants' communities, because what we have realized is that some of the communities were not getting feedback of where their
progress is where the land claim is, and that resulted into them getting angry and resulting into riots. So we had to sit down and have a communication plan to say, how do we really get the message across to the claimants, and we're trying to assist in that and spearhead that communication. And I've already alluded to operational meetings, and this is just basically to highlight that in the operational meetings we do, we provide them with a GIS person, a mapping person, to go out and map all those graves with them and put them in the map, because they don't, some of the divisions in the rural development and land reform, they don't have enough capacity to do that. So we try and really get down into the detail of the work that is really the bottleneck. And I must also emphasize also the issue here with the claimant is that we're now starting to have a lot of overlapping claims where claimant X and Y is claiming the same properties, resulting into delays, further delays, and it's really a little bit of a problem into unbundling the claims. The issue of the settlement model has also been alluded to. In terms of the settlement model, we started with a sort of a document which was presented to the task team and also the Department of Rural Development, which was crafted by Forestry South Africa, which presented different models, the lease-back model and rotation issues. And we presented that as a sort of a document that we can also work around it and see if we can have some sort of principles adopted for SAFCOL going forward. And then we were also requested by the department to look at how Richtersveld was settled, and we did have lessons from it. The challenge to Richtersveld was that it was one community, and then when we get to Komatsen, it's 29 communities in three provinces. So we had lessons learned, and we really even presented a report on that. The issue of the decision of the future role of SAFCOL has an impact on the land claims, in that whatever model of settling the claims is adopted should be in line with what the future role of SAFCOL will be going forward. I think I've discussed with the issue of the development of the settlement model. Things that we from the SAFCOL side felt that there are issues that need to be considered when the model is developed, as highlighted here, it's more of the issue of saying whether SAFCOL will have issues of joint ventures or partnerships or shares or not. Then that is not really clear to us. And whether the shares will be issued to claimants, and if they will be issued, how and at what value. Members will remember that even in privatized entities, the shares that were supposed to go to the communities has not yet gone there. They're still warehoused, and I think it's with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. There's no formula to sort of do that. And we're saying if that formula exists, then we can start the process going forward. And I've also highlighted that there's a need for SAFCOL to attain land rights. This is because SAFCOL doesn't own that land. And in terms of the Restitution Act, the claim is between the claimant and the department and also the owner of the land. Now, this land that SAFCOL is working on is owned by the it's under the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, but the title deed is with the Department of Public Works. So Public Works has title deed, and then Water Affairs have got the rights which they gave it to SAFCOL. So if we do not have those rights in terms of the lease, we don't have the rights even to negotiate with the claimant. So if we don't have those rights, it makes it difficult for us to, if I can put it the right way, to courtship with them and have pre-agreements and pre-arrangements. But if we have the delegated rights to act on behalf of the owner of the land, then it becomes easier that we can sit down with the claimant as if we are the owners with those rights. But we don't have it at the moment in terms of the lease that we have. So that is another issue that needs to be unbundled as we start the process of negotiating and dealing with the land claimant. Challenges above all the issues that we've faced in the land reform issues is the slow process. And that is really a big issue, because it's starting to breed other issues. When it is too slow, communities can't stand it. They resort into other means to force the process to buy in. And as I speak, in one plantation at KwaZulu-Natal, they have even moved inside the compartment where, you see, they moved. They were staying in a place which is not accessible. They couldn't get to the public roads. And they informed us that they had deaths because there was no road where they were staying. They moved Nongoma area. They moved inside the plantation. We had to go in and cut out so that if there's fire, they, can still survive. So they are resorting into some sort of illegal occupations of land and threats. Some have even marched and toy-toyed to operations with placards. So the slow progress is really the biggest challenge for us. And as I've alluded to it, issues of boundaries and overlapping land rights. In Limpopo in particular, there is a, if I can put it, there's a chief who's claiming under ESTA rights, Extension of Land Tenure Act, over the land which is claimed by the community under the Rural Development and Land Reforms Act. So the chief says, in terms of ESTA rights, this is my boundary. And the claimant says, no, we've lodged the claim in terms of Restitution Act. So the policy issue comes to play, and those are the real challenges that we're facing, which we as an entity have got difficulties to deal with. The issue of lack of agreed settlement model, as alluded to, and issue of delegation of powers and rights in terms of the lease of the land. In terms of the way forward, we see that the green paper will also shed some light, as it has already been stated in the green paper that state land will be sort of dealt with differently, and there's a lot of promises that the green paper has in terms of how the state land will be settled. And also, I think we are strengthening our role in terms of engaging the role players, and DPE is assisting us, and we appreciate that, that the work by the department. And also the issue of implementation of our socio-economic development programs. We have highlighted specifically claimants within the area to make sure that the benefits that the companies have accrued to them, so that we can position ourselves as preferred partner of choice to the successful land claimant. And yeah, I think those are the few issues that I would like to highlight. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to honourable members of the committee and the Chair, and my fellow colleagues from the Department of Public Enterprises. Before I get into the presentation, I just want to highlight that over the last few years, we haven't followed sort of a tick-box approach to social economic development, enterprise development. We've tried to go through a process where we know we can make a difference. In terms of the process that we followed, we did a social scan a few years ago to try and understand the communities in and around our plantations. And as part of that process, we've gone on to sign a social compact with each one of the communities that are in and around the plantation. To date, we have 11 compacts signed, and I'll get into the details later on. Essentially, the compact sets up the relationship between the company and the community. And as part of the compact, we normally have the community that's involved, the local municipality representatives, the local leaders in the area, being it chief or the king that's ruling that particular area. And in order for us to try and implement our projects, it's quite critical that we have all the relevant parties involved. Once we've got our social compact signed, we go through a process of setting up a development charter. We set up a charter for each committee, or for each compact, so each area knows the manner in which they need to operate. And I think one of the critical elements on this particular slide is to highlight the needs analysis that's undertaken. Now, we just don't go in and embark on a project. We sit down with the community and the joint community forum, which is established once the compact is signed. And the most critical element is to try and understand what are the greatest needs in the community. I think for us the most difficult part is that the needs analysis is quite a large file that we get every year. But in terms of the budget and the areas that you need to stretch it in, we try and just highlight this critical stuff that we need to focus on. As part of the presentation, I just highlighted the KLF or Komati Land Operations, which is the main operating company of SAPCO. At the top end of the map, that's the Limpopo province, and we have two compacts in that particular area, one signed with the Chibase compact, and the other being with Impepu. One is closer to Toyondo, and the other one is closer to Makado. In the center, we have a sort of the Savi area, I'll go through the list of contacts that we have in that particular area. And in sort of in the middle, closer to the border with Swaziland, we have the Highveld district, and we have a few contacts in that particular area as well. And right down at the bottom in KwaZulu-Natal, that's in Ngome Plantation, about 30 k's from Nongoma. To date, we have 11 compacts that are signed. The target for the current year is to add on another 2, so that will take it up to 13. As I've highlighted, the top 3 plantations is sort of in the Highveld area. The Chivasi in Pepu is up in Limpopo. The Manjolo is signed with Chief Mnisi next to Nelsukta Plantation. Ngome, as I mentioned, is in KZN. The Mapulana and Hebron, those are in the Sabi area. Berlin, I think most people will probably be more familiar with the place called Kopsewerp. And then Palm Ridge is where we have our seed orchard, which is about 60 k's from St. Lucia. The main aim of the social compact in our SED programs is to make sure that our joint community forums is fully represented as well as fully functional. The second thing is to make sure that we try and meet the critical needs of the community. One of the slides that I'll highlight here is the strategic partnerships that we've established. We are one of the smaller SOCs. We were not going to deny that. So in terms of us actually trying to drive our program, it's quite critical that we work on a public-private partnership or with other public entities as well. This highlighted the amount of spend that we've had from 2006 until 2011, and then I'll go into a bit more detail with the last year of 2011-2012. Since 2009, we spent about 25.6 million on social development. The largest portion of it goes into infrastructure and land. I think we'll later on in the presentation, when you get into the actual work that we've done, you'll sort of see the need for improvement in the infrastructure, especially around schooling and education, as well as healthcare facilities. I think it's just by default that we have to spend the money. You know, for us, it's no use sort of putting the money into, say, buying computers or textbooks if there isn't a structure to actually accommodate the students. In 2010-2011 year, we spent about $6.2 million. Once again, the largest portion of that went into infrastructure. And then we also spent a fair amount in education and ICT. On the ICT side, we try and get at least 100 students online every year. And we've done some work around that in terms of cost savings and how we can actually stretch the budget a bit more. In terms of comparison, 2010-2011, as I mentioned, we spent about $6.2 million. But at that stage, we only had 8 clusters or 8 social compacts that we had signed. Last financial year, we had 11, so the budget moved up a bit to about $8.1 million. I think in terms of the areas, we've got the clusters up there and what we normally spend, and then there's also an item at the right at the bottom called non-cluster. That is sort of requests that we get in from time to time, which communities sort of fall just outside our footprint area, but we're still trying to accommodate their requests. We try and make sure that we touch each cluster or each social compact where we've got a compact signed. We try and make sure that we have at least one project in that particular area. In terms of the spending, and as of our largest, the most amount of money goes into infrastructure and land. There has been a drop from the education. If you see, there's been a drop from 1.2 million to 800,000 last year. And I just want to sort of highlight the reason behind that. 3 years ago, we had a partnership with Dell. The company only bought its computers from Dell, so we paid about 600,000 rand per annum to get 100 students online. Then we got involved in the partnership with MassMart, and they directed us to Dion Wide, and we saved another 200,000. And then last year we, to get 100 students online, and then last year we set up a partnership with Mercer, and so they were able to get the same 100 students online, but it only cost us 250,000 rand. So it's not that we're neglecting the area of education and ICT is just that we've been able to save and we're able to put a bit more money into the infrastructure projects. This particular slide, I just want to highlight that over the last 2 years or so, we're a timber-based company. We grow trees and logs and then we cut it down and put it into timber. So in the prior years, we were building with brick and mortar, but we've actually moved on to start building in timber structures. One of the things is the communities, we make sure that we gain their support. They need to accept the idea that we want them or that the structure will be built in timber, so it's not something that's forced onto the community. At first, there was a bit of reluctance, but once they've accepted it and you see the first structure, then there's more greater acceptance. I think it's purely because of the history of the country and timber structures. It's not a shack that we're building. It's actually a proper structure with a foundation. And I think if you see the qualities of timber, et cetera, you know, it sort of keeps you cool in the summers and warm in the winters, et cetera, and especially in the areas that we're building, it's quite useful to actually use this particular material. I've given you a breakdown of the areas that we've actually spent our money in. I'm not going to go through each one of them, but we have some pictures later on. And in terms of the partnerships that we've set up, we've tried quite a few government departments and municipalities, especially in the areas where we have a social compact. We make sure that we work with the municipality and aware of what we're doing. Penridge and Ecolink, they're responsible for teaching our ECD centers. They take our ECD centers, the teachers, the educators, through a particular program for us. I mentioned the Dell Foundation, the MassMod Group. Now, cash flow is quite critical for us. Given the amount of money we spend on infrastructure, they give us quite a huge discount, up to 50% on some of the stuff that we're going to buy, so we're able to stretch the budget a bit more. We work with the DBSA. We've got an MOU and a value proposition document signed with them, and at the bottom I've highlighted that social development, enterprise development operates as a cost center, but we're able to bring in a bit of revenue for the company last year when we did a social facilitation in the Giani area for the bank, and they actually paid us for it. We work with various features. I've approached the Eskom Foundation, Vodacom Foundation, MTN, Mango, Mercer. We've worked with them. Metropolitan Foundation is actually now the MMI Foundation. We don't operate in Eastern Cape, but they've approached us to build timber structures for them in Eastern Cape, which we have done. And they've also visited a few of our operations in Limpopo, KZN, etc. So they're quite keen to actually partner with us. PG Varson, it's part of the Steinup Group. They provide us with all the tabletops when we build our ICT centers. And then I think I've already mentioned Dion Wyden and the Sugarcane Growers Association, which is helping us with a project in the St. Louis Palm Ridge area. In terms of the timber structures, I'll just touch on a few of them. This is Beckett Solani Primary. This is the first timber structure that we built. It's not the first timber structure. It's the first timber structure we built under social development. We have built previously. It's close to the border of Swaziland. Around about the Amsterdam area. It's on our plantation called Rabenia. And we were quite privileged to have who's now Minister Ben Dikobe Martins open it for us. Essentially, Beckett Solani had a brick and mortar school, sort of three classrooms and a creche. The three classrooms catered for grades 1, 2, and 3, 4, and 5, 6, and 7. So you had combined classes in one. So we had to extend the school. And we built an additional three classrooms so they could be able to split the children and teach them their respective.
One of the members who visited, yeah.
Okay. So it is there. this is another picture. Though. Now, I just want to touch on these a bit more. I'll go into Ratchathunga Admin Office, which was built up in Limpopo. It's an admin office and for one of the local schools. The Lororo Disabled Shelter, it's essentially it's sort of about 60 km outside of Sabi. And it was being, there's about 20 or 30 people that are working at the particular shelter, and they run a vegetable garden. But they had no storage area for their materials, for fertilizers, no place to actually work from. They were operating out of a shack. So we went in and we built a timber structure. Now, I think if anyone wanted to ask which is a special project, you don't want to mention one, but if there's one that definitely comes to mind, it would probably be Mulidane Life Care Center. Last year was out in Limpopo opening up three ICT centers with His Majesty Kennedy Shivase, and I popped in to look at the status of Mulidane, and we just laid the foundation. That was about September last year. And so I asked the project manager, you know, where are the young men staying currently, because I heard we're building the center for 35 orphans. And then they pointed to the tents up on the top. These young men were staying in these tents for at least 5 years. And we both went in and built the timber structure, and it caters for 35 young men. And the center is sort of managed by one of the local pastors who started the center. I think one of the other positives come out there, and just to highlight that there is talent in the particular area. One of the young men that lived in the tent wrote his grade 12 last year, qualified with 4 A's and 2 B's. So, and this is another picture, and I think this was the last structure to be opened by the Minister, Ben Dikobe Martins. He was present as well. Under the social development, we run a few skills programs as well, with the assistance of the FITA. We have an upholstery center that we started in Salvi. So after sending these pictures out through the company, we were able to get a bit more work in, because we drive quite a few buggies. So a lot of the guys are saying, you know, come in and upholster my vehicle as well in terms of the seats, etc. And then in terms of the skills development, we've got a carpentry workshop that's running up at our sawmill in Tembedola as well. When we go in and build a structure at a particular school, or we work with the community, we try and leave something that's going to be sustainable. So we set up a vegetable garden. I think this particular one is in the Majola area, where with Chief Anisi. But at most of the schools as well, we have a program where we try and set up a vegetable garden so the school can actually sustain itself in terms of meals. That's our ICT centers that I was working with, and those are the tabletops that PG Barson helps to sponsor. I think for us the most critical thing is we don't want any child to come out of the schools that we in our area, which is mainly rural Limpopo and Mpumalanga, etc., and they get up to university in Johannesburg and it's the first time they're seeing a computer. So it's quite critical that we roll out these ICT centers, and we try and do, as I mentioned, 100 students every year. Some of the other projects that I just want to mention, up in the top, we have built quite a few ECD centers, and then we train the teachers for about 6 months until it's taken over by one of the sister departments. We've trained the community in terms of first aid training. Quite often there's a lot of correspondence that we get with regards to the inability to get people to an hospital in time, which is quite critical. One of the other key focus areas, if you look at the policewoman talking to the crowd at the bottom, is the prevention of abuse against women and children, and then also teaching the community about the environment, the importance of forestry, etc. When I mentioned the victim care centers, and it's unfortunate that these are in brick, but we've moved on from there. We have two victim care centers that we built. The first one is in Sabi. They are operating quite out of a very small structure next to the Sabi police station. So we built a victim care center where victims can be housed overnight, etc., or for a few days if required, until it's safe to either return home or look at alternative accommodation. And the one in Livubu, we it is completed, but at that stage we took a picture when we were still in progress. The other area that we looked at is enterprise development. We've split up enterprise development into sort of two areas. One is your large-scale enterprise development, and then the other is sort of your forestry enterprise development. On your larger-scale enterprise development, the sort of four main projects that we're looking at the moment is a charcoal project in the Robernia area, and I'll go into some detail with that. There's a beekeeping project that's already commenced up in Limpopo. The green energy, which is quite critical to us, we're busy in discussions with Eskom. It started off on SAFCO running this on their own, but it's sort of moving towards an Eskom-SAFCO partnership. And then the last one is timber frame structures. In terms of the charcoal project, I think for us the most critical element was to make sure that we can get the EIA approved, and that took some time. The area that we look at implementing is unemployment is in the region of about 70 to 75%. We set up a partnership with a company called Silicon Smelters, which is based in Polokwane. They have a huge need for charcoal of the nature that we can actually produce. So they're willing to actually provide us with the kilns. We would produce charcoal. They're willing to take up about 90% of that. Our current status is that we're looking at establishing the legal agreements between ourselves and the and Silicon Smelters. The bee farming project, that's already commenced up in Limpopo. As with any project that involves Mother Nature, there's always the difficulties, but I think we're getting there slowly. We have the DBSA as a partner. The DBSA came in and sponsored most of the training that was required, and SAFCO made sure that most of the infrastructure was put in place in terms of hives and the safety gear for the community members that are involved in this particular project. There's also talk of rolling it out on a national basis because the requirement and the price of honey going up the way it did. So we have done a lot of detailed work around this year. We have rolled it out, and I think the DBSA partnership was quite critical for us on this. On the green energy, I'll probably just highlight, you know, where we started with this. Essentially, you know, after we go through our harvesting process, et cetera, on our plantations, there's quite a lot of biomass that remains, which is, you could refer to it in a crude sense as being forestry waste. And essentially, SAFCO wanted to look at how do we convert this into an energy source. And we actually started off the study ourselves, so looking at how do we convert it to an energy source and then put it back into the grid in some way or form. When we approached Eskom to say we need to set up a wheeling arrangement with you guys, they actually came back to us and said, but hold on a second, you know, we would actually prefer buying the biomass from you and then coal-fired with our current coal-firing power stations. So essentially that's where we are currently. We've given Eskom a commercial document to highlight what we can provide to them on an annual basis, which is about 150,000 wet metric tons. We're going to look at rolling out a pilot project, and the current status is that we are assessing the technology. Eskom is talking about using the biomass, converting it into a bio-coal, and then co-firing with their current coal power stations. Timber structures is quite critical for us. We strongly believe that, you know, timber construction is the way to go into the future. If you look at some of the countries overseas in America, in Canada, etc., as well as in Europe, a lot of them build their houses with timber for various reasons. What we've tried to do, this initially started off as, can't we promote timber structures in the sort of RDP housing sector? That's how we initially started it off as. And then over time, we started to roll it out into our social development. And I think at some stage, you know, once we have a full buy-in from the community, given the speed that we can put it up, the cost that we can put it up at, we'll be able to actually break into that particular housing sector as well. So just to highlight, on timber structures, we set up a cooperative to actually do the construction for us on our social development program. So it's a fully black-owned construction company, the first fully black-owned timber construction company in South Africa. And I wouldn't call him a young man, but he's got over 20 years' experience in terms of timber construction. So he's actually quite proud to run his own business today. And then on the other side of enterprise development is forestry enterprise development, where we go through and establish forestry contractors to assist us in our current operations. Quite often you'd find that the plantation has a need, they have a requirement, and we need a service. And so we get the community involved and try and set them up in their own business. Now, if you look at purely at community members without any forestry experience, it would probably be Siam Pumulelu. They are based in KZN. So the KZN Social Compact has seven communities in that particular compact. We've taken five people from each one of those communities and set them up in their own cooperative, and they provide silviculture services to us. Today, we've probably spent about, since 2009 up to today, we spent about 32 million rand on these various contractors. I'll touch in a bit more detail on some of them in the next slide. In terms of, maybe before we just go into Falcon View, no, you can leave it there, Liz. And that you can go on to the next one. In terms of Falcon View, I just want to highlight before we go into the detail behind Falcon View. The idea is that we will set up the co-op depending on the services that they require. Be it if it's harvesting, there's a bit more, which is a bit more capital intensive. We will assist that particular co-op with funding. So we will give them a soft loan to purchase the machines, etc., that they require. If it's a silviculture operation, we normally give them a closed contract for 3 years. If it's a harvesting operation, we normally give them a closed contract for 5 years, given the outlay that they need to put in order for them to purchase their capital equipment. But the performance is still assessed on an annual basis, and the idea is after 5 years, you must be able to tender on the open market and get a contract with other forestry companies. Now, the reason why I mention that is Falcon View, they were able to get a contract with a fellow forestry company after 15 months of operation. So they were managed to actually get it in a lot less time than what we originally anticipated. The productivity levels hit 150% at one stage. So essentially the co-op members get paid for what they produce, and that has actually pushed up productivity levels quite high. These are the list of contractors that we have, the number of people that we've employed through this particular program, and the provinces that we're based. Originally it was started off on the basis of, you know, either co-op, close corporation, or private company, and later on we sort of moved purely into the co-op space. I think the co-ops have its challenges, but there are those positives as well, where, you know, we're able to access the grants from DTR to the tune of about 350,000 rand a year. 350,000 rand once off. The services also vary as well. We do a lot of harvesting, conservation work, construction, gardening services, silviculture, etc. I already mentioned Siyam Pumilelu, which started off in Gome. It was 27 members, but absolutely no forestry experience, and they're operating at the level where they should now. BYS initially started off in sort of the Sabi area as well, and they've actually moved on to another plantation, given the level of comfort that we have around the quality of their work. I'm not going to sort of go through this slide in detail. I'm hoping that the presentation and the detail that I gave you at the forefront sort of sets out the conclusion that, you know, we are committed to enterprise development and social development, especially in the areas that we operate in. It hasn't been an easy task. I think there's quite a lot that we have to address, and I think the only way we could address that is if you look quite critically at the partnership that needs to get involved in. And if we can get whatever help we can from either our sister companies that we operate in under the same umbrella, as well as private entities, we're always willing to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. No, Chairman, I want to proceed with the agenda. Just on the next item now. Just to introduce my apologies. Just to introduce the next item that we just want to take you through now, your recommendation since your last visit. Just want to give you progress on that. Thank you, Chairman.
The recommendations as highlighted here were captured in the parliamentary document. I also want to emphasize that we have worked more over and above the recommendations in the parliamentary documents. As I have been engaging with members of parliament, there were certain issues that we noted down, and the CEO also had a management meeting to discuss some of the things that we picked up during the visit. But as we are only providing information just on the parliamentary documents as we have it. And these are the recommendations mentioned. I won't highlight them in detail, but I'll just bring this next slide, which captures the gist of the recommendations. The first one, Chairperson, it's on the concerns regarding the future role of SAFCO. The second one is on the need after the committee saw all these communities and need for convening provincial and local departmental meetings in Mpumalanga in order to assist with the resolution of the conflict. And the other one is more on the committee's urge in terms of us continuing with the enterprise development project and initiatives, and we have highlighted that to the committee. The other one is on the need for coexistence. I think what we will do here from SAFCO point of view, we will highlight the ones that are specific to SAFCO, and the two ones that are specific to the department, I'll ask the department to take us through them. And if you can allow us to first quickly run through the ones that we as SAFCO had mandate on to do something. The first one, I would like Pamas just to highlight quickly on these two, Pamas, on the enterprise development and also the issue of the coexistence of the community.
Okay. In terms of the social development and trying to make an impact, I've been through the presentation, but as I've highlighted, the needs are just so great at the moment. You get such a massive power that last year we had to stop with the needs analysis, and what we say is, given that we've been through this process twice now, let's look at what's in our current power. I think the most critical thing for us is to try and get as many partnerships in as possible. In terms of the peaceful coexistence, I'm sort of fairly new to this particular industry, and for me, it's going to be a process. I don't think it's a situation where we can walk in and sort of wave a wand and, you know, the company and us and the communities that we operate in is going to operate in total coexistence. There is a need for housing. There is a need for decent housing in the areas that we operate in. And we need to try and put in plans to actually accommodate the workers, not only the workers, but also some of the community members in facilities that, you know, would be conducive to proper living. So it is a process. I think the company has embarked on it. One of the other things would be to try and educate our operational people with regards to the needs of the community and how we need to coexist as well. We've sort of moved on from the situation where I am the farmer and this is my particular farm. We have a community on our doorstep. We need to look at them as our future partners, and it's quite critical that we actually work together.
The particular concerned by the honourable members on the development side was in relation to workers and children of the workers staying in our villages. We have, through our transformation division, we have sent them out to 18 plantations to do a scan of how many compounds we have, how many people we have, how many communities we have. Out of that report, we have already identified areas where we're going to roll in the external activities that we're doing in the communities, like incorporating them with the bazaar schemes, building their place structures. We've already built one in the area that the members went to. It's existing, it's finished, it's done, it's completed, and we're happy with the input that we've had. I think in the issue of sanitation, the concern by the members was that where workers are going far away in the bushes where there's no toilet facilities, we have initiated the project. It's underway as I speak, to be completed before this financial year. We'll complete it this year. The transformation team again worked with operations. They identified certain mechanisms, whether we should go the movable ones, the built in certain distances of the areas, also the chemical ones. They have looked at all the options, and approval was made to do rollout on a pilot basis to each plantation to see how it works, and then we will see how to take it forward. Already, it's underway. It will be implemented. Pilot will be done in the 3 districts. We'll make sure that we do the piloting within this financial year. The other one was on the renovation of, in particular, the Flag Plus accommodation in Jesse Vale area. The renovation renovation has started. The only thing that we are working on is just the painting part, but the fixing of all other things which was necessary, it was done, and the painting will be completed in this financial year. The issue of play facilities is done deal. Is there? I have a picture somewhere here, and I will show the pictures in the document. I'll just get in and show you exactly. They've reported. What we did is we, when the CEO convened management team, we put action plans for each and every area, and we had to tick them one by one. That's why I'm just saying some of them completed already. Some we're doing the pilot. Some we haven't completed. I think I must just quickly show you the picture, but that was my last. And when DP is giving us information on future and also provincial engagement, I'll be getting the picture.
Thanks, sir. I think we have already spoken about the future role of SAFCOR. However, I will just report on the provincial engagement with the provinces. In fact, what happened was that last year in December we went to Toyando, where we met with the local chiefs and the mayor of Makado and the mayor of Wembe. I think it's Wembe, and where we engage them on around some of the issues affecting the local communities, and some of the things that came out of that was to sort of establish a sort of a coordinated approach to address those issues. In fact, what they wanted was some of them wanted shareholding in SAFCOR as part of representative, and we said, well, look, I think what we need, what was decided was that, in fact, that delegation was led by the former deputy minister, Martins, and it was agreed that they will convene a forum where all the other local chiefs and other local mayors will be invited. And in fact, so far, we were supposed to meet with the Mpumalanga provincial government. However, there was a strike at SAFCOR which sort of delayed, rather, which led to the postponement of that engagement. The strike was concluded. In fact, the negotiations, or rather, the strike in SAFCOR was finalized around or towards the end of July. So we're just waiting for a new date to finalize that. But we're hoping that we will have those engagements within this month or so.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Allard, in terms of Mpumalanga, we have had a meeting with the Department of Public Works because they were setting out their planning, which commenced last month at CSIR with other companies that are involved in the area. They're planning for the next 15-20-year plan for the particular province, so they have included us in the particular forum. Yeah.
And we'll take questions, Chairman, and while Leslie is looking for the picture. Thank you.
If you remember, there at the back, here in the shade, there was a hall here. And here there was a dilapidated structure here. We took out the stuff. The only thing you can see is the tires remaining, and there was some stuff. We took it out and put a new one.
Chairperson, I must say you're doing an amazing job in a a very difficult circumstance. And thank you too for your presentation and the action taken on the things that were raised by the portfolio committee. We don't always get in some of our committees the response like this, and it's very good. Thank you. Can I just ask? I've got a couple of things here. You know, when you talk about the research, I'm talking about the land claims now. You know, it's something I know little about, but it just seems to me that we're taking unbelievably long, and I know it's complicated, but if what you're saying is correct, the research done in 2008, and you've got to deal with all the complexity of that. You know, when you're having these, and I presume these multiple meetings, I've had a couple of instances when I've had to deal with this, and it just goes on for years and years. You know, do we set time frames, or do we go from these interviews, meetings, and then, you know, it just can go on for as long as it like? I'd just like to know, and you know, by when do you see, surely by now, after starting in 2008, there's some idea of the end of the road. You know, and when would that be? I must also ask, you know, I serve on the Human Settlements Portfolio Committee. The structures, and particularly the housing, you know, we've just been out there, and the frames of the windows and the doors that go in, if the beneficiaries can't maintain, and wood timber needs maintenance, if they can't maintain, how long, you know, is this going to last? So I see you shaking your head, so that's good, because what I saw was pretty dreadful. And then I'm also very impressed, you know, with your training and passing on skills and training up people. I think that's critical, and this entrepreneurial thing. I want to ask you, this grade 12 learner that did so well, where does he go from here? Does somebody try and pick him up and assist with a further education? Because now that's one young man that I think would be so sad to lose him in the process. And then I've got others, but I'm going to just do one more, Chairperson. Yeah, sanitation. This is a real baby of mine. I've seen some pretty dreadful sanitation. Now, I want to ask you, I see you're going to be looking at pilot projects, and I'm just, if this is really a comment from experience, and that is to say, when you are doing this, please bear in mind, what might go in brand new and be fine for a month or two, what will be the long-term service of that, and the maintenance that the beneficiary will have to do with that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I must say I'm relieved with great appreciation to hear such a thoroughgoing presentation. I was disillusioned when the meeting started. GP did not give us hope that there was going to be such an excellent presentation. That's number one. Number two is that I want to decry the fact that such an excellent presentation is presented, and that's not to cast aspersions on you, by the absence of the top leadership, meaning the chairperson and the CEO. Now, we must come hard on all these SOEs. Last week, the chairperson led us on a tour of the ports, and we've picked up this point here that what the tendency is that when the Parliamentary Patrol Committee is coming to visit, the top leadership just flees. They try to flee, they open diaries and pre-book themselves to go elsewhere, and then delegate the rest of the staff to the lower-ranking staff
who struggle and do a better job, presumably better than the leadership itself. That's the irony of this whole thing here. Because what we had here today is wonderful, and I think it can't be duplicated. But in terms of parliamentary protocol, we do expect the top leadership to come here. A good example is SAA. Each time we call them here, the chairperson is here, the board, as well as the CEO. Almost without fail. And then, of course, Trumpson, of course. They always do that. And, of course, ESCOM. But the other stakeholders of the president, which are with difficulties, do not do that. They always dodge and run. The next quick point is I want to register my appreciation, chairperson. I think most of us will agree that when we go on oversight and we make some accommodations, they are actually fed back to us. That when you visited us, you raised the following points, and then this is what you have done about them. I'm so impressed because it vindicates oversight that we don't just go there as a nuisance, but we're being taken seriously, etc. Et now, one little point is I didn't hear much of the industrial activity of Safcon, as opposed to your competitors, Mondial, Sapi, etc. What they do with the wood and making paper, etc. All those things. I had very, very little about the industrial aspect to what they're doing, except just that you're growing these beautiful trees and then building schools, etc., and doing other things, housing, etc. But we're missing out on the industrial thing. We're also missing out on the R&D. When we are there on our side, we were told about the damage that the baboons are causing. And then there was a suggestion that I proffered, which sounded very ludicrous, that if the baboons can find some exciting thing to eat in the park itself, why don't you do some research? Perhaps what they've discovered is what humans have not discovered. The baboons have discovered something that humans have said. And if research is done, that you might find that thing that they are could actually, you know, have solved many of our health problems. Yeah, you never know. I mean, so it's like a laughing matter, but it's not a laughing matter. It's not a laughing matter. You know, just a little aside, chapter, and let chapter support me. Most of you watched on TV, I think about 10 months ago, that here in the Western Cape, the baboons were causing a problem, as we all know. And they were troubling this farmer and ripping the crop before the rabbits, etc. And then all of a sudden, the baboons just disappeared. And the farmer just said, "What the relief? Where have these things gone to?" And one of the workers espied the baboons behind 17 mountains. They had discovered a very unique fruit, and which was better than what they were feeding on. And this farmer said, "It's a novel fruit, and now the whole thing is a secret now. He's just gone there now to actually grow the fruit, etc., and it's going to be a very lucrative market for export." So again, the baboons discovered something that other local farmers didn't discover. Can you believe it? So, on the road to they must become MPs. Yeah, but then, on a more serious note, what about this scientific kinship person? I think must not leave it hanging. The other thing is that Transnet uses railway sleepers. Now, US, of course, I mean, Transnet is your sibling company. Why don't we hear that they are buying wood from you to make railway sleepers? Why is there no intra SOE trading? And you appear to be struggling, etc., and all this thing. And then finally, chairperson. Oh no, the last one. Last but not least. You mentioned the question of the licensing. Who is this authority that issues forestry licensing? You mentioned the fact that it's not easy for SMMEs to get a forestry license. Now, I want to know who is the authority that issues these licenses for forestry. Finally, the shareholding thing that actually worries, you mentioned the warehousing of shares of Safcon. I think this is what chairperson bedevils the development of Safcon. Because it means there are some people who are having some paper shares there. They are told that they had one day you're going to become billionaires when Safcon gets privatize, here's a dummy. They're holding on to all these shares. I don't know who has issued all the shares, because a decision has been told, they've been taken to stop. Now, the shares I think were housed. It really means now that that's caused the rest of the paralysis. Now, don't worry about the stuff for him, because one day it's going to be good. Now, how many of the shares? I would like somebody like yourself, madam, who's in charge of the audit, to actually, not today, but to unpack the whole shareholding of this share that are being warehoused, how many millions, and then at what price have they been allocated? Are they freebies given to the community to placate them in chiefs, etc.? No, don't worry, then become a problem here. Here's a share certificate. Who issued the shares? Authentic shares or just some spook shares?
I want to add my voice to those that are saying that this is this presentation is too good. It's a presentation. Sorry. It's a presentation of an entity that operates in a normal environment, and you are not. As Safcon, you don't know what will happen to you tomorrow. But the presentation is tabled as if all is normal. Thank you for that. Just a few quick questions on what you are trying to do. You are trying to model yourself into something, and you want certain departments, including your department, which is DPE, to come to the party. What is their reaction? And how long has this been in place? I'm looking at your generic commercial forestry model that you are trying to work to both the land affairs and the DPE. And also, you are going ahead, in fact, you are, let me say, you are quenching fires in the forest, trying to stop communities from taking over these forests by signing compacts with them, going into partnerships with them. What is the reaction of those entities or those partners that should have been next to you when you are taking all this this effort to save Safcon from being drowned into the problems that you have already stated? I'm referring to these two departments, DPE and Land Affairs. The last one, Chairperson, would be, what is this now? Let me leave them at two, Chairperson, just to say on the question of those baboons, that I think right on the top of the mountain, when we were there, we made a resolution. And that resolution was, they are a community that needs to be consulted as well. So I think a meeting needs to be organized so that they can tell us what is it that they get from those trees that they are destroying. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chair. Allow me to also to thank you for this presentation. Just a few things I'd like to discuss. One is the timber housing. Now, I think that it's a pretty good idea in the right environment. I have seen planned projects where the houses are actually in a sort of ready-produced box format, and the boxes are simply delivered, and then the house goes up, and literally the house goes up in no more than 3 days. So it's a very good and thoughtful process going forward. There is, however, two things that worry me profusely about timber-framed housing in South Africa. One of the things we have to think of is salt fires that occur in South Africa, and it is a big problem, and it's a problem that occurs especially along the high salt area of South Africa. And also, I think we need to accept the fact that we suffer greatly already from shack fires due to the burning materials that are used in shacks, paraffin as an example. And we would have to look very carefully at how we make these houses fireproof, as much as you could possibly fireproof a timber house. I would also like to ask you, are there plans, because I have seen a specific area in Leeuwenhout Bush in Pretoria where an aid centre has been established, and the hospice area has been made out of a timber frame construction that was imported in a box set from Germany. And it is basically a fully operational hospital that gets set up in this timber frame area. And the great thing is, if they need to move it, they simply deconstruct the timber frame and can move it to another area and reconstruct it as and when the need arises. So I want to know if you're looking at anything specific like that. Then one of the things I notice and I understand is that the resolving of land claims is one of your highest risk factors, and we can understand why. What I would be interested in, Chairperson, is getting a full breakdown of where exactly. I see that we have a breakdown of Limpopo, Mpumalanga, KZN, the Research Gazette, settled, transferred. But, Chair, the amount that is settled is actually quite low. And this is becoming a problem for SAFCOL, and it is our duty to try and make your lives easier. And perhaps if you could let us know exactly where the holdup is happening, we as a committee could ask, the questions for you in Parliament, and we could try and get the ball rolling, but then we'd need more information on what exactly is holding up these land claims. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. By now the questions will become very less because all of my fellow colleagues have asked so many questions. I want to focus specifically on the timber frame structures. If you can give me an example of, as my colleague has put it, a fixed house, a size of an average fixed house. Is it like 40 or 50 square meters? I know you can adjust, but it comes to low-cost housing, what is more or less, and what will the cost be of such a house? And I also see that your main operations are in Limpopo, KZN, and Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga. Don't worry, we in Sudan are a bit different today.
we have to get it right. Mpumalanga.
So what I would say is, how ready are your BE contractor, for example, to actually put up houses in the other six provinces? Can they do it very easily? Because if it's like a fixed frame, everything, they can transport it easily, I suppose. Because in South Africa, we will never catch up with the backlog in housing. Not in my lifetime. We don't change the way we go with low-cost housing. We will never catch up. I know the waiting list, for example, for the city of Cape Town and other smaller municipalities in the Western Cape. It's impossible to actually go that route that we're actually busy with now. So I'm really interested in this. And even if you, for example, small community centers, like a hall or so, there's a big outcry in communities to give them like small community centers or creches. If I can get the idea of a breakdown, of course, I will really appreciate that. And I was also very interested in your play park structure. What is the cost of something like that? I will stand with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And firstly, let me give a compliment to SAFCOL on your presentation, especially on the social economic development programs and your enterprise development projects. I when we visited you, it's really a drop in the ocean, but it's so important because the need is so vast where you operate. And we all felt when we visited, we wish we could increase it tenfold because of the need in the communities. But I really need to compliment you on the effort you put in into your social economic development programs. We visited some of them, and your initiatives and your passion and your willingness to carry on with that within your financial constraints is really highly appreciated, and we encourage you to carry on with that. Also, thank you for giving us a progress report on our visit to SAFCO. It's really exciting to see that you're reacting to what we say. We will discuss that progress report, and we will again give you a feedback so that we work together and to see how we resolve the problem. So it's an ongoing interaction with one another. So I really want to compliment you, secondly, on giving us a proper feedback on what we ask when we visited you. We will interact with you, I think, in the fourth term on the annual report, and I think you tabled it, or you're going to table it shortly, if you didn't table it yesterday. So we will interact with you about the status of SAFCO when we don't have to discuss that today. I want to ask a question on the land claims. We've been to your place, we've seen it, we talked a lot about it, we talked to the department about it, and I think you aptly summarized it in your challenges slide, namely that it's a very slow process, there's a lack of an agreed settlement model, and that's linked to no delegated mandate to SAFCO. Honorable Mokwena referred early to what you said, a generic commercial forestry model that was developed already in 2008. So if we take that for granted, that you have a settlement model, a commercial forestry model, clearly spell out your challenges regarding the land claims. When I listened to you carefully and when we visited you, there are at least four departments involved, government departments. It's DPE, it's Department of Agriculture and Forestries and Fisheries, Department of Rural Development, and Department of Public Works. It seems to me, and yourself as SAFCO, as a state-owned entity, there may be more. So my question is, when I listened to your presentation on land claims this morning, you said to us, but listen, SAFCO, we have a generic commercial forestry model. We asked the right questions about joint ventures, the shares, and negotiated settlement about the title deeds and ownership. And you also then spell out the challenges, lack of agreed settlement model, and no delegated mandate. So where does the problem lie? Where does the buck stop? And if I make a deduction from what I heard from you today, you say, no, our house is in order. The problem is with the four government departments that cannot coordinate and get their act together to get this generic commercial forestry model in place. I hear you say the Presidential Review Committee, which is going to report shortly. Of course, we need to wait to see what that commission will report to the President and eventually to Parliament. But I need to find out from you who is responsible in the final stage to unlock this web, very complicated web of taking years, months of not getting to an agreed settlement. Because we're in a lose-lose situation. All the people that claim land don't get answers, they lose. You cannot operate sufficiently as a land, as SAFCO. The government departments, seems to me, if I listen carefully to you, doesn't talk to you, but to one another. So I need to find out, as part of the ongoing debate, where does a problem originates from, and what do we need to address to untangle this spider web, and to make sure how do we move forward to find the settlement? Because there's a lot of talk over months and even years over various ministries, as a fact, when we visited you. And this term of parliament comes to an end in 18 months' time. Then there's a new term of parliament coming in. And I think we really need to focus to say, who are the role players? Where does the buck stop, and where does the decisions need to be taken? I would like to await your comments on this as an ongoing discussion going forward. And I don't want to shoot the messenger of the department, because he's only sent here with a mandate to talk about the future role of SAFCO. But the first presentation that we should have received, then nobody can report. That first report of the department would have linked up to this report back that the committee visited, get the feedback, look at the land claims that you aptly and very thoroughly explained to us. So some ways we miss a tune every time, and there's a misstep. So I just need your comments. How do we join hands to take it forward? It's not you and them, or us and you. It's all of us, because forestry is a national asset. We all want a solution on the land claim issue. We all want SAFCO to succeed and become a shining example like other forestry campus in the rest of the world. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairman. You've categorized questions. We'd like to deal with the land claims first, timber structure, commercial ways of dealing with baboon, commercial and creative ways. I will answer questions on sanitation and skills development, and I'm going to think of other questions, combine the rest of the questions, please.
Sorry, thanks. On the issue of the land claims and the challenges and who's responsible to unlock it and how do we unlock the web, I just want to highlight two critical things in that on the land claims you have the landlord who holds title deed of the land, and you have the shareholders who hold the shares of the company. Now, these are the two things at play in terms of the land claims. Claimants wants to know from the landlord side, where's my title deed? How do I get what is lease rentals or title deed value? And they also want to know where's the shares of this business is running. How do you make profit and how does the shares come to me? And I'm saying the landlord at this stage is government through the Department of Public Works. But they have given the rights of all forestry land to Dwarf, state forestry land to Dwarf, who further leased it to SAFCO. So those are the real complications thereof. And I'm just trying to summarize it to say, look, there are issues of the slow progress, and I think the other issue I would like to raise to the members is also the conflicting legislation. As I've highlighted it earlier on, you've got the Restitution Act. The Restitution Act, a person who lodges a claim is entitled to that land back. Then you've got the Land Tenure Act, which talks of extension of rights which the chiefs will have over the area. So now what we are finding in some of the Kumatland Forest land claims, there's a court case between the Chivazes and the people who lodge the claims. Those who lodge the claims says, in terms of Restitution Act, we need this land. And the one in terms of Esther rights says, I've been the chief over the land and I've got rights over the land. So they took each other to court. That case is in court. And it affects about seven claimant groupings, which if those seven groups were settled without conflict, would have settled seven claims at a go. And that is 7 out of 31, which is good number. So I'm saying that there are those issues that goes in. And in our opinion, and as I've already put in the on the slide, is that we think that
the issue of the delegation of mandate and power, that SAFCOL now is the leaser, is leasing the land from Dwarf and it's owned by the state, is a complication on its own, which if it's unbundled, lessee leasing the land from the lessor. So those are the real challenges. Coupled with the policy issues and coupled with the fact that the shares of the companies with DPE, but the land ownership is with DEF. So that brings a lot of stakeholders in play, and it's very difficult, and that really addressed the situation, and I hope I tried to answer that one. The issue of Thomas will deal with that one.
I think in terms of timber structures, I just need to go back a bit. Initially, this started off as a discussion with our partner, the Development Bank of South Africa. What they highlighted was at the outset that in the Eastern Cape, for example, whenever the floods come, there's a need for putting up temporary housing. And this is how the idea started. And we went into the department, and just to highlight who we've spoken to thus far, we've been to the Eastern Cape Department of Human Settlements. We've been to the Cape Town to talk to about the provincial level. The unfortunate part is that you continuously moved around and sort of nobody gives you an answer. So, you know, in terms of talking to people, you can do it once or twice, but then it becomes a matter of wasting time. So we started to implement on our own. If you look at the fire issue, we work quite closely with one of the best architects in South Africa in terms of timber design. The idea is that the material is treated in advance from a fire retardant point of view. There's also material that we put in the walls which prevents, if the house does catch on fire, it prevents the fire from moving to other rooms. It's sort of contained in a single room. The issue is that when a fire spreads, you know, if you look at an informal settlement, for example, the fire spreads because there isn't proper spatial planning involved. So regardless of whether it's a brick mortar structure or a steel structure, it's still going to burn. So our architect has highlighted that whenever we do build, he makes sure that we have a proper spatial plan in place. Coming back to the quality, I'm not too sure in terms of the areas that you looked at where the window frames may have moved, etc., but we work with builders that have quite a substantial amount of experience in the area. We built a structure in Krobo. It was our first attempt at timber construction in the current era. I wouldn't say it was our best work, but we built a creche for the local community. I think the settlement is called something called Roy Tucker. And if you look at the work that's been done by the company that undertook the construction of the housing, it's actually quite poor. And the reason why we looked at that particular area in Krobo is because SAFCOL as a company built houses there 40 years ago, and those houses are still standing today. The treatment is an oil-based paint that goes on, or it's oil treatment for the wood, that goes on in the first 2 years, and then you don't need to treat for the next five. And if you look at it, it costs you about 700 Rand for the oil-based sort of paint that needs to go on. And every 5 years, you still need to paint a brick mortar house, which will give you the same cost. In terms of speed of construction, we can get it up fairly quickly. Like Becky Zelani, for example, we prepared all the material in a closed environment, and then you do the assembly on site. Now, a 200 square meter structure took us about 2 weeks to complete. From a cost perspective, it was about just under 600,000 Rand. And so you're looking at somewhere between 1,500 Rand a square meter. In terms of our builders having the capacity to build, I think we'll need to train a lot more people. What we've done is, because our current co-op is busy with work for SAFCO, but all you need is someone with basic carpentry skills, and those skills are sitting in the country. We work very closely with a gentleman that works for the Wood Foundation. He's got over 30 years experience. He ran the training college for timber construction in the Cape. And he's
he comes across and helps our construction workers with passing the skills on. I think one of the other issues is what is the cost of the pay structure. What we do is we look at an assessment of the number of children that are at a particular center, and the cost will vary, say, from somewhere from 6,000 rand up to about 14, but you have to build the structure in line with the number of children that are at that particular center. I'm not too sure if I've covered up all the questions or if there's any other.
Just the one on the sanitation, the issue was we must look at long term and the issues of maintenance thereof. I was just reading on the submissions. What happened is after the visit, the CEO called a forum. We discussed the issues and we took it back to management. They looked at operational practical issues and then they come back to say that we would want to pilot these ones, but then they are working with the transformation team. The transformation team, what it does is to make sure that it's purpose fit, it can be utilized by everybody else, including women and so forth. Where we are now, we want to pilot on the basis of the fact that we will either get maintenance on the toilet, or they are mobile, they can be taken to and fro, but we will keep proper feedback as we come in the next steps to say how far we've been on the pilot. Is it something that can be sustainable going forward? Can it be maintained? Is that not a once-off issue? It's still at a very early stages at the moment.
CSIR. CSIR have done a huge amount of research in this particular field, so it might just be something whilst you are considering your pilot project to also look at what they've got. Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. The question around the grade 12 people from Muladane, we in the process of arranging his medical aid, etc., because he wants to come to university in Cape Town. So it's a long way from Limpopo. We sort of doing that sort of privately on our own. Currently, we've got him admitted to one of the feeder colleges in Limpopo, so we don't waste the year. And then once that process is completed, he's going to help us with registration. I know the CEO of the MMI Foundation, which is the Metropolitan Momentum Foundation, and he works quite closely at UCT at the moment. So he's trying to help me get this particular student into UCT. Okay.
The baboon question, we take note of comments about convening a stakeholder session with the baboons, but it's going to be difficult. We are engaging in a research. It's not a bug. No. The baboons, they debug the tree, the trees of South Korea. That's how they damage them. Yeah. Right. And in debugging it, they find some resin, which is very attractive, tastes like peanut butter inside there. So in order to access this thing, they realize that, well, of course, you know that their sense of smell is like a dog, developed 77 times. So we're sniffing around the forest saying, no, man. There's something inside you is nice. So the Israelis said, how did they just destroy the bug? Yeah. So that we're saying there might be a scientific value, medicinal value in this resin, let's call it some peanut something, inside there. Now, then your R&D division must actually look into that instead of just saying, oh no, this is just a pest, this is just an incident, they're just destroying, destroying, destroying. They might be destroying to alert you as primates. Hey, you foolish primates, there's something inside this. We're taking baboon issues as a risk to our growing stock. and in managing that, we are doing a lot of research work on it. We have done initial layoff to see, we collared them, to see their movement in and out in the conservation area, plantations, what times of the day, and so forth. We even get somebody to videograph them, see when they strip the back to the shoe. And then we got a student from University of UNISA to do the assessment of the content of the bark to see whether it's got nutritional value. Last year, we engaged through Forest South Africa with funding a research through a professor from UCT who's well known for baboon research in this area. He's spearheading a fully-fledged research on the behaviors of the baboon to see whether there's anything that we don't know about them. So there's a research work. I'm impressed, but you see what happened. The CEO, when we mentioned this thing, she just scoffed at the idea. And I'm actually impressed that it's actually so taking up short, you know.
The other question was around industrial action and Safcol as a company. Yes, we are predominantly in growing logs and putting it into sort of a sawlog market. In terms of our processing facility, we have one sawmill up in Timbadola, up in the north of in Limpopo. And then we've set up a few custom cut operations in and around the Highveld area. There is a drive towards processing our own logs. And I think that's part of the assessment that we're going to be taking in terms of the future role of Safcol. How do we go about this? I think we need to try and do it in a responsible manner so we don't affect the industry, and that's one of the assessments we need to do. But I think, you know, if we can process logs in a very efficient manner, then it helps other industries downstream. In terms of further processing. So, for example, if you set up a high-intensity sawmill in the Sabi area and you're able to produce that lumber at a lower cost, you're able to actually bring in other, like sort of your furniture manufacturing, your school desk manufacturing, your roof trusses into that particular area. So it may create better employment than working at a small sawmill with substandard conditions. The other big issue on...
But why don't we do it? What constrains you from doing it?
I think that's part of the bigger plan, and we do require approval from the shareholders. We do need approval for further vertical integration within Safcol. So
are you saying the mandate of government is just to say that Safcol... thou shalt just do lumbering, period, and no beneficiation.
It's not even lumbering. It's so we only predominantly growing saw logs, and there's no further sawmilling that we can actually partake in currently. Just to come back to in terms of the project around Eskom. The 150,000 wet metric tons is purely a pilot project. If you have to look at the future requirements of Eskom, it's actually quite a critical project for us, not only for us but also for Eskom. You know, just to highlight, yes, the wind farms, etc., are quite critical, but those coal-powered fire stations are here to stay. They're not going to disappear overnight. And Eskom is looking at reducing the current requirements on coal about 10%. So, as an example, currently they burn about 200 million tons of coal per annum. They're looking at forestry biomass being replaced and taking up about 20 million tons. So that has an effect on the industry for the expansion, possibly not in South Africa, but in our neighboring countries, etc. And those are some of the areas we
sort of experimenting with from an industrial point of view. Coming back to the issue around railway sleepers with Transnet, coming back to the railway sleepers around with Transnet, I had a visit a few weeks ago from a consultant group that's been engaged by Transnet to look at the enterprise development and to see how they can actually improve on their current BBBW scoring. And I mentioned the railway sleepers purely as an example because they tried to understand, you know, what would they do in terms of enterprise development to improve their score. And I highlighted to the consulting group that was there that, you know, why don't they look at railway sleepers? It's something that's it's our industry. We are involved in it. I do know that there has been a move towards
Chair, without belittling the point, a question was asked about the absence of top leadership. I'd like to report that our CEO is going on maternity leave. Yeah, she's going on maternity leave and our chairperson is traveling.
Thank you, sir. I just want to get clarity on gentleman said that it's average around about 1,500 per square. Does that include, just to make sure, a solid foundation as in this picture as well as your cost as far as for a kitchen and ablution facilities? Or is that separate?
Thank you very much. No, I just wanted to ask and propose the following. Of course, you know, I've been hearing this for 8 years, and my difficulty is, you know, I don't hear different things. But when you go out there, you know, you can see something. So it comes across here as, you know, we're stuck in a sort of time warp, or you know, something is not moving. And I wanted to ask, what legislation and policy prohibits us currently from taking this entity, maybe I shouldn't say the sector, but for ease of reference, just say the sector also, prohibits us from taking the sector to a, you know, a height that we would want it to be out of an uncertain world. And I lastly want to say, Chair, I think that I want to propose what we should do is, you see, the current access that the Minister of, I don't know who now, the names have changed, is supposed to, in terms of the National Forestry Action Plan, is supposed to report every... I don't know if it's every second year or third year, to Parliament on the future of the forestry industry. And within that, SAFCOL is located also. So, Chair, I think we need to find out, is that because that's what the current law is saying. And if the current law or any other policies is not assisting our cause, then I think we should revisit that. But I also think I would imagine we up long time for a complete policy review of the sector and locate SAFCO within that. And maybe we must make a contribution to that aspect, because we're gonna ask the same things if you come here. DTI has had an extensive interaction with forestry, and they looked at the offshoots of all of these things. You know, so it's one of these very scattered things that we are having, almost not different from the transport situation. We've got Transnet, and then they discuss policy on the other side, and we discuss how much the board be, is the board big enough, small, what, and for the rest, they're just moving along. We're having a far more complicated one year. he says that DWAF is, I mean, there's no DWAF even anymore. There's the Department of Water and Environment, and what is the legal status of what he has said earlier on, when he said that, you know, they hold something. I would imagine when the president signed in these new departments, hopefully they've taken all of those things on board. Now, that's how complicated this thing is, and I think we should maybe ourselves have a conversation with everyone else that is out there, from agriculture, and I think we should get involved with the land and agri committee also. It's not them, they're not the problem. Even DPE, it's not them that's the problem. It is our land reform process in South Africa. They are bedeviled by the land reform process in South Africa also. So unless we create the policy framework that could assist this process, it is we're just going to hear the same things. Chesa, I wanted to make that proposal, and thank you.
I have not shocked Honorable. No, shock. Not short. My predicament, Jefferson, is that here is good work reported to us. When this entity is operating under a cloud of uncertainty, who holds the key that would give this entity a direction? And what is it that we are saying to whoever is holding this key? What are the timelines that you should be taking into account in order for this entity to understand where it is going, what it is going to be tomorrow or the other day or that day? I think that is what we need to address.
That we'll raise with the minister when we engage with him. We can't complain before the officials. No, we will raise it with the minister. Oh yeah, there was a question. If we could please attempt.
Thanks, Chair. The Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries has a process called stream flow reduction activities, because forestry is given license under that process.
Okay.
Because it reduces water from the rivers through whatever process. Now,
you continue.
Now through that forum created, mm-hmm. Department of Water Affairs and Environment gets involved in the process of issuing those licenses. So even the issuing of licenses is not particularly
from one
department. It involves other departments, because there's a process of doing environmental impact assessments that goes with it. There's a huge process on it. They first ascertain whether a particular stream where you need licenses on is oversubscribed or undersubscribed, and then they issue licenses accordingly.
I think, are there any other questions, comments, or did you leave anything out from your side? Ma'am Dufi?
The shareholding thing, the warehousing, not for this meeting, obviously, but to unpack that in our meeting.
Yeah, that's for later.
Here are the shares paid for, or free of charge, etc., etc., so that you must know the liability of the state, because if you give out shares,
okay.
It's here.
I think we can deal with that later. We may, because I don't think you'll have all those answers now. Honorable Bobbins?
Very quick question for clarity, which has not come up. On your summary of SAFCOL claims per restitution stage, just help me to understand why some of these don't add up to the totals. Thanks. You've got settled, and you've got obviously then your total claims. Thanks.
The one that doesn't add up to the totals is the ones that are under research. That's why I put estimated values, because the boundaries are not yet
identified. As and when it's gazetted, then we'll have the exact hectares. I just wanted to also allude, Chairperson, to the previous question on the research done in 2008. That research was purely a research by SAFCOL to ascertain how big is the elephant,
okay,
how much of the land is underclaim. And in 2008, we identified 61%. We are going to initiate another one to find out, has that shrink or is it increasing? And the indications are that it has increased with three more claims, so the percentage could increase. So that is the research we were doing.
No, thank you so much. I think we've now come to the end of this meeting. And I would like to... Oh, no, but before that, I also want to thank you, SAFCOL, for this report, especially, you know, giving progress report on issues that members have raised. But I think we would like this to be on your report as we meet from time to time. Most probably when we visit next time, we would like to see some progress that side on what you've reported here. But I think we said when we ended our visit to SAFCOL that we would like to have a quarterly report on the issues that have been raised. And we are quite impressed that we see this slide and whatever that's made for these kids, yeah. But I think you just started. And we would like to see that, you know, developing, because I remember there were some teenagers also around that area that we met there, whom we actually spoke to as well. So I don't think this really caters for them. So we would like to, in our next meeting, we would like to see the work that's continuing. But thank you so much for this report. And this then brings us to, I'd like to thank members for their input and the department as well. This brings us to the end of the meeting with the chair. Members must remain because we committed ourselves that we will not leave the meeting without considering the minutes. So you may leave. If you want to, you may stay, but I know you don't want to stay. The less you see of members, the better for you. We'll have a 5-minute break for members for the department and staff call to pack their stuff and leave, and we will then continue with the meeting. And we will have a safe journey to wherever. I don't want to have to touch you.
mind is tossing over the mountain. What's that? What are you thinking?
Chairperson, on page 4 of those minutes in the responses, The second bullet, or in fact it's the first bullet point, it says Transnet pensioners have been given significant increases in ad hoc bonuses and there was commitment to improve the living conditions of the pensioners. Chairperson, I'd question this highly as I'm the person that asked the question about the pensioners, and in actual fact the response that we were given was that they had received the ad hoc bonuses. However, there was no commitment to improve the living conditions, and in actual fact we were told that there would be no further cash injections. So I think that particular bullet point needs to be looked at.
Okay. Honourable Mkwena?
I concur with Honourable Mkwena. But delete the word highly.
Okay.
Because it's aspirational and just a good exaggeration. There's no way that can be highly when in fact the base was just 2%. It's a hyperbole, it's a highly. I think let's just remove that part. But I think we must not leave the one that says there was a
word highly.
Significant.
Significant.
So significant, yeah. But I think it was a statement, because it just shows that it was making progress this time around,
So Transnet pensioners have been given increases and ad hoc bonuses. That's what you are saying.
And Chair, the fact that they said that there would be no further cash injection.
Okay. And that there
nothing
no
was
further.
Said about improving the living conditions.
Okay. With that amendment, can I have a mover for adoption of this minute? Mm-hmm. Honourable Kuranov, and
moving.
Seconded by Honourable Michael.
I'm not moving.
Oh, sorry.
I'm not going to waste your time.
Okay.
But this is this document has not been proofread properly. I've made smaller changes, and apart from this one, the second bullet on first bullet on paragraph 4, which I agree, there are other smaller issues that I'm going to give to the secretary. So that you can...
this is just correction. They don't change the...
No. It's
content.
Semantics.
Okay.
But it makes for a better document.
Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Okay. Honourable Kuranov move with those amendments and Honourable Michael second. Thank you. The minutes of the 22nd of May, I put before that Honourable Committee for consideration and adoption. Page 1. Page 22nd of May. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3.
Page 3, the you see paragraph 3, the bullets. 1, 2, 3, 4. The fifth bullet from the bottom.
Yes.
Clarity was sought as to whether there was enough coal supply to support that.
And
the sentence is incomplete.
Clarity was sought on the shortage of skills and the importation of foreign. What are this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Clarity was sought on the shortage of skills.
The bullet that starts with clarity was sought as to whether there was enough coal supply.
Coal supply? But where are we now?
No.
From the bottom. Oh. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Clarity was sought on to whether or not there was enough coal supply to support the just make a note that this one is in look at it to conclude that sentence. Anything else on page 3? Page 4? Honorable Coroner?
Then you see all these minutes that we're doing are going to do. The most important one is that conclusion and recommendation paragraph.
Okay.
And if we can just make sure that all of them, the rest is semantics, but the conclusion and the recommendation, because at the end of the year, we're going to summarize, we're going to base our next year's program on this one.
Yes.
So we need to make sure. Furthermore, it should ensure that subcontractors adhere to labor's legislation and do not exploit workers. Is it now ESCOM that it, and how are they going to do that? So I think we need to make sure that we're not vague on the conclusion and the recommendation paragraph. Be very specific, because we will come back to visit this again.
So it must say, if I understand you well, furthermore, ESCOM should ensure that subcontracts adhere to whatever labor legislation and do not exploit workers. Honorable Maria?
Just referring to that point that was not concluded,
mm.
but if you look at page 4, sir, with the bullet points, the last three from the bottom, the bullet points, the lifespan for Medupi and Kusit was 50 years, and they were national key points. That links very much up with that sentence that is not concluded, the question mark.
Okay, but you also still look at these notes. Thanks, thanks, Honorable Mane. Thank you. Anything else? Move up for the adoption of the minutes. Honorable Mare, seconded by Honorable Fonda. Thank you. I table before the committee the minutes of the 29th of May for consideration and adoption. Honorable Michael, page 1, page 2, page 2, Honorable
Professor. Page 2, you see two bullets at the bottom, and then just above the second bullet, the restructuring of the balance, I assume it's balance sheet,
yes.
will yield the following result.
Yes. Page 3?
Page 3. Furthermore, in the middle of the page, furthermore, the government support was required to DA's place a role in the following. In the third bullet, VVIP helicopter requirements. What is that VVIP?
Yeah, yeah, this is what was
but
said.
Then it looks like a WIP. Then
but up. You just said VVIP.
Yeah. I'm suggesting just put it in brackets like the next two bullets.
Okay.
It's Express or SAA, whatever the case may be.
Right, thank you. Page 4?
I think in page 4, 2.5, the first paragraph. In response, the department informed the committee that SAAB made an exit from the contract with the DSA because that company was going through difficulties.
Which is that one?
Yeah. It's we can formulate a better
because
sentence in that
was,
one.
Yeah, because staff was going through difficulties.
Is it financial difficulties or operational difficulties? I'm saying I can't remember exactly what they said in the meeting, but it's too blunt to say
yeah.
that company was going through difficulties. We need to go back to see whether it's financial difficulties or operational or whatever the case may be.
Thanks, Honorable Governor. Blood they save. You have a comment?
And then that the next 2.5, the first bullet, the last sentence, the problem with the business aerostructures, comma, the returns are low and the risk is high. It's probably the problem with the business of aerostructures is that the returns are low and the risk is high.
Okay. No return, high risk. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7,
the third bullet from the top, the costs of the flight was influenced. It's probably the costs of flights.
Yes.
Were influenced by the currency. It's not the currency, it's the volatility of the currency. It's up and down. And the
volatility.
The volatility of the currency.
Volatility.
Volatility.
Yes.
It cannot be the currency that influences the flights.
No,
it's
the
volatility. And then the next bullet, SAA required a cash injection to support the turnaround strategy of the entity. The balance sheet of the entity was not healthy, comma, due to the
global fuel price.
Influence of the high global fuel price. It's only one factor that influences. It's not only because of the high fuel price, the other factors as well.
Among others.
Just for interest, Chair, when we were there up in SII, did I at one point elaborate on the selling of the landing spot in London at that point in time?
Of that?
They sold one, how would you put it, landing spot in London.
Landing.
Not landing or what you call it.
Landing. Yeah.
Did they tell us about it when we were there?
I don't remember.
I don't remember. They should have known at that point in time.
Did they?
No.
No, they didn't.
I found it strange.
They knew about it.
A long time.
Yeah.
Negotiations went on there.
Anything else on page 7? Nothing. Can we have a move up for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Banker, seconded by Honorable Tonto with all the corrections.
Yeah.
Thank you. Which one is it, Honorable Sir? What would it? Issued. Okay. Right. Okay. With those corrections, it's adopted. Moved by Honorable Michael and seconded by Honorable Santo. The minutes of the 12th of June. Page 1, Honorable Michael.
Chairperson, as our discussion that we had in our non-curate meeting last week, you will note the apologies of myself and Honorable Murray. Chairperson, as indicated, not I nor Honorable Murray were informed of this meeting. So we would like it to be put there. You can note it as apologies, but I would like it noted that the reason we weren't there is because we weren't informed of the meeting. Because I do believe, Chair, in fact, Honourable September actually came and said to me, she's so glad that I cleared the matter up, because in the meeting it was actually said, does the DA not find it important to come to a meeting and approve minutes and strategic planning? And I think, Chair, you would know us well enough to know that we take our meetings very seriously. And, Chair, we also, within the Democratic Alliance, have a very strict system of ensuring that members are at their portfolio committees. And this now reflects badly on Honourable Murray's record and on my record. And I think it's only fair that due to the fact that we weren't informed of the meeting, it must say that in the minutes.
Okay. Because I also did my own investigation. But I think let's not dwell too much on the issue. I think what do you want us, how will you record it there? How to correct it? Okay. We will correct it accordingly. Can we have a mover for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Kuranov?
Before you go, on the second page, update on visit, oversight visit. You remember when we visited Mango, they said they passengers, they call something differently.
Yeah, they had a word.
They had a word, but here we use for SAA customers, and I
guests.
Now I see the users of SAA we call customers.
Yeah, that's what SAA. That's how SAA refers to them.
Okay.
Can we have a move up for the adoption of the minute? Honorable Mukwena moves, and Honorable Santo, you were not there. You were there, so you do qualify to second. I thought you were in the mines. Honorable members, we have a report here of the portfolio committee, which is a report of the oversight visit to the department and the state-owned companies. This is dated the 13th of July. You'll recall we took an oversight visit between the 18th and 22nd of June. I hope members had an opportunity to go through the report. Honorable Michael.
Chair, I'd only like to say one thing, and again, it's purely semantic, and I'm well aware that English is not everybody's first language, but Chair, there are grammatical errors throughout the document, one of them being when in English you talk in the plural, it's followed by are, and when you talk in the singular, it's followed by is, and throughout the document...
But in Cape Town, they do it.
They do it differently.
Different.
Chair, we must just look at that because throughout the document the word is used instead of are.
I think it's because it was written in Cape Town.
Yes.
Honorable,
no, on the same vein, I'm not going to do the details. The tenses are sometimes incorrectly used, and I get the impression this document has not been proofread before circulation. I appeal to the secretary, just proofread it, or ask somebody to be proofread, correct the tenses, then we're not going into
the
details.
Yeah, there are quite a number of grammatical errors. How do you want us to go about this? To send it back, or to... What I'm going to suggest is, I know that Dr. Kuranov may have done a lot of corrections on his document. If that can be given to the secretary, I think we agree on that. Yeah, they're not substantive. It's not really about the body of the report, but it's just grammatical error. We agreed, Dr. Kuranov.
And then?
You can just give that to the secretary.
And then the minister approved.
We approve it with those corrections.
No. I can do it, but there are other issues.
Okay, let's go to those issues. Let's not deal with the grammatical errors.
Okay, so go.
Yes.
If you like, page by page.
Yes. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6, page 7, page 8. Everybody's looking at you, Dr.
On page 8.
Okay. You're keeping everybody suspicious.
You see, Chairperson, when we visited the Port of Richards Bay, the committee came away from that meeting with a certain impression of the quality of the presentation, the in-depth, the answering the questions and so. And that impression that we had a consensus on after the meeting, I don't see reflected yet. Yeah, I read through it and all is going, there's no problem, it's plain sailing. And I don't get the impression that the people were not prepared for the visit, could not answer all questions properly. There was a lack of motivation in the port. It was a very sort of complacent interaction. The unions were not happy. The stakeholders were not happy. There were huge sad. And when we talked to them, then it surfaced. But not close to what the real deep problems were, and I'm very hesitant to approve a report that is not reflecting what we experience as a committee on the grassroots. Because next time that this entity reads this document, they say, don't worry, just go, they will brush over it. Because the port of Muga was in another class of the port of Richards Bay. But here, I'm reading over it, and I can't get the sense that there's challenges in one report and it's okay in another port. So that's on page 8.
Yeah.
Especially on the 3.3, recommendations and resolutions. So that I would ask you to consider.
Yeah, Honorable Koranov, if you look at page 7 there, the top, is it page 7, what is it? It's page 7, 3.2.2. Those things have been captured, but the issues that you are raising, but they have not been included in the recommendation. So what we may need to do is just to request the committee secretary to look at those, and as you write them, and include them in the recommendation. Because it says that there was no career development plan and over-reliance on one individual, hence low morale of employees. Those are the things that I think you were saying you are letting us to. There was a high vacancy rate and the process of filling is too slow. You know, so if those things can be captured in the recommendation, in the thing of the resolution of the committee. Honorable McQueen.
Yes. related to Richards Bay, I made a solo visit to Richards Bay because I missed that last leg on account of the bereavement of my aunt that I was going to bury on that Saturday, subsequent Saturday. Now, I asked the committee secretary to arrange for me to be received. And he did an excellent job, and I was received by the manager of the port, Mr. Jimmy Laws. I was quite impressed, and they put together a number of people, also from Devon. So I was treated like some celebrity, almost like a deputy minister. I was quite embarrassed. And, so I thought, just one line, to say I was not part of I made that special individual trip, and of course I paid it off my pocket for it, just for the sake of the record, that's all.
No, we can't do that.
We can't do that, but I mean...
No, we can't.
No,
I'm not insisting. Yeah, but how do you cover a thing like this?
Like this.
Yeah, you see, this is a committee report. Oversight visit by the committee. And so you undertook a thorough trip to Richards Bay.
No, I'm not insisting. But I just didn't go there as a civilian, member of the public. I went there as a patrol committee member. And I was Julian.
Yeah, but you see, it can't be our report.
I'm not, what you're saying. I'm not insisting. I'm just saying reference. Reference should be made.
No, we can't refer to that.
I've said my piece.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Because whatever, like I said, this is a committee report and it ends there. That's fine. But it'll have nothing to do with the committee. Any further comments on the report, Honorable Kwano?
Just summarize the last two visits to SAA and Kruspoort. Again, I say the paragraph 5.3, the important recommendations and conclusions. And then we talk about concerns raised by the learners and stuff. But we can only ask them to report on concerns raised by the learners and whoever contained in this report.
Yeah.
What they heard outside the report is not our responsibility. So that's why I
the detail of our capturing is important so that when we come to the recommendation paragraph send it to SAA and to Transnet, you say, these are the concerns raised with us, you must respond to these concerns.
Okay.
And they are 1, 2, 3, 4. Not in the recommendation, but they can pick it up in the report. So
in
I'm
the
giving
report.
The report
okay.
back to the secretary, so
okay.
my attempt so for the fine tuning.
No, that's fine. Any further comments on this report? Can we have a mover for the adoption? Honorable Michael, any seconder? Honorable Maria, thank you so much. The report is so adopted. Can we... Oh, is there anything here? Nothing. The BP is adjourned. Thank you so much for your... Oh, yeah. Pardon? To declare. Yeah, you must declare it.
Let's find out from the chat.